Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with bonkers.ie, Ireland's favourite comparison and switching website. Visit bonkers.ie today and start saving on your household bills.
Star, good afternoon. How are you?
Hey, Philip. How are you?
One man's worldly possessions, another man's litter, it would seem.
Yes. Yes, absolutely disgraceful behaviour by Dublin Corporation.
You're dropping off a fare along the Grand Canal.
Yeah, the just there at Charlton Place, the Hilton there at Charlton Place. I don't know whether you know, or some of your viewers, listeners would know that there's always a couple of tents there. There's one side of the Lewis Bridge, there's one sort of the Renlis side of the Lewis Bridge, and then there's one actually tucked away down along the bridge itself, down where it's sort of in a little sort of a valley, and it's covered in there. I'm dropping this guy off from the airport, bring his bag up to the door. I turn and I look and I see these two vans arriving, two small Dublin Corporation vans, the minivans. And I couldn't believe what he's saying. The two of them got out, high-vis. One looked like he was some kind of an official. He hadn't got a high-vis jacket on him. He was dressed all in black. He walked down. He just pulled the tent up, grabbed the sleeping bag, and just dragged them along the path, just threw them into the bin lorry. Or the bin vans, the same happened to the other two.
And this was a Dublin City Council bin van, yeah?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It was clearly marked as such, yeah?
Clearly marked. The ones that you see normally going around that you have the key where they open the small bins along the street, those vans. These were definitely Dublin Corporation vans.
And these are, as you say, tents that have been there a long time. Fellas who have, for whatever reason, chosen not to engage in the services of a hostel but have decided to sleep out. I know the tents that you're talking about, the way that you describe them, actually brings a snapshot of them straight back into my memory. And did you overhear any conversation? Did you get any idea of what they were doing?
I should have actually videoed it, to be honest with you, Philip. I should have videoed it. But I actually said to the guy, I said, look, that's actually somebody's home. And he just looked at me and walked on. Just didn't pay any attention to it whatsoever. I was really shocked to think that the Dublin City Council are actually supposed to be providing places for these people.
Could you see, Lauren, the way that the tent was lifted up, that there was actually stuff in it, that it wasn't empty?
Yeah, there was definitely stuff in those tents. Definitely stuff in the tents. I don't know what was in it, but they didn't seem to care either. And I know these guys are only doing a job as well.
And when you say there was stuff in it, are you talking about more than just a sleeping bag, that there would have been other possessions with it?
There could have been, yeah. There was some kind of it's like, you know, when you pick up a bag that has a bit of weight in it, you'll actually see it. You know, you can see that there's a bulgy sort of a thing in it. And that's the way those tents actually looked. There was stuff in them. And it was funny because the following evening, I was passing and I seen a white van, a white transit van. And I just pulled in. And it was actually people that was giving out, whether it was the Simon or one of the homeless charities giving out a sandwich and a cup of tea. And there was a guy standing there, I didn't even take him for being homeless. And he actually said to me, all my possessions was in that tent.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
How did you strike up a conversation with him? Did you tell
him? I just walked up and I just seen the van and I just slowly walked up. He was standing there. There was a man in a high-vis jacket. He had a sort of a greyish beard. And there was an African guy. He was actually standing inside the van, handing out this guy a sandwich.
And you said, you'll never guess what I saw happen here last night.
And I just said it to him. I just said, look, you're probably wondering what happened to the tents. And he says, did you see Anne? And he says, was it vandals? I said, no, it wasn't vandals. It was Dublin Corporation. He says, you're joking. And I said, no, I'm not.
And what was he doing for somewhere to rest his head that night?
He was sleeping rough. He'd nothing. Only for those people had came along. I gave him another sleeping bag. He had nothing.
No tent, no sleeping bag until they arrived.
And yeah.
That was for the second night.
That was on the Wednesday evening.
Yeah, what had he done on the Tuesday?
I don't know. I really don't know. I didn't strike up that kind of a conversation with the lad. I just looked at him and my heart went out to him. Felt really sorry for the man.
How was he about it? Was he angry? Was he depressed?
He was, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he wasn't the happiest sort of a fella, put it that way. Like everything that he had, no matter what it was, no matter how little or how much, It's not a nice thing to do on anyone.
And did the guys running the mobile soup kitchen have anything to say? Had they heard or seen of this before?
Well, I said to them I was going to get on to yourselves. And they said, we'll try and follow it up with Dublin Corporation.
And you're absolutely 100% as sure as you can be that it was the City Council or employees of the City Council that did this?
Yes, 100%.
All right, well, we'll make the same calls as well. Lar, thank you very much. Stay on the line, though. Cormac, good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon, Philip. How are you?
51551, the text number. What made you stop and help this person? It's 11 o'clock at night of a Friday. You're heading for a bus. I presume it was cold and wet. Why did you stop?
Well, what made me stop, Philip? The guy was trying to gather up some cardboard. And I just copped that he had one arm in a sling. I was trying to do this with his one good arm, you like. And I just said, you know, do you want a hand with that? And he sort of nodded, and I said, well, where are you taking it? And he pointed over to a wall. So as I'm walking to the wall with him, I noticed that I just said to him, where's your sleeping bag? And he said, and he gestured, because he didn't have an offer of English, he just said, I don't, shook his head to indicate that he didn't have one.
What age of a man was he, Cormac?
It's hard to say. I'd say he was between 50 and 60, maybe towards late 50s, I would estimate. I'd say he was a lot younger than he looked, you know.
Hmm.
You know, roughly mid-50s, mid to late 50s, I'd say, you know. And I just asked him, would he like to see if I could get him a bed for the night? And he nodded. So I knew the drill. I knew there was a central number you ring. I didn't know the number, but I knew, you know, this is the drill. You ring this number and they organise it. So I went on my phone and I searched the internet and I found the number.
For the Homeless Executive Helpline.
I think it was the Homeless Executive Help number. I think it was.
Which we should probably give out now that it arises. It's 1800-707-707.
Yeah, well, that's the number I eventually got. But it may not have been that number that I rang at this stage. Although I think it said, from what I can recall, it said on the website that it was available to 2 a.m. But this number just kept ringing out, no answer. So eventually I hung that up and I decided I'd ring Simon. And then I just got an automated response from that number. And I did the same with Focus Point and I got the same response. But I kind of knew that the way to go about this is you ring a central number. So I decided then... there was a Garda station nearby, so I asked the guy to accompany me to the Garda station, and I went into
And how
the
was he about doing that, Cormac? Was he trusting?
Oh, he seemed to be very trusting now. As the night went on, he got more and more trusting. Now he wasn't aggressive. He was very, you know, accommodating. As I say, he hadn't much English. I did get out of him at that stage that he was Lithuanian. But he had very little English.
Think that the lack of English was the thing that had stopped him from trying to access these services himself?
Well, to access these services, I know that a lot of these homeless people do have mobile phones and do know the drill, that you ring this number and you speak to whoever's at the phone and they organise.
They tell you where to go for that night.
Tell you where to go and all that sort of stuff. I would say, A, the lack of English, and B, he didn't seem to have a mobile phone. I don't think he had a mobile phone, you know, so he hadn't got a phone to access these services.
And did you get any more of his story out of him, how he had come to be in this situation?
Well, I got that later on when we went down to the hostel when I eventually got him a bed for the night. He had very, very little English, and he was also very difficult to understand with his accent and so forth. But I did gather that he was 5 years in Ireland, probably Dublin. I'm not too sure whether it was anywhere else. He said he worked in construction, and he had come his arm, whatever way he injured his arm, it happened as a result of him working in whatever he was working in construction.
And presumably there was now no work for him because his arm was injured.
I presume that's the case now. I presume whether he's getting any benefits from whatever, sick benefit or whatever, I don't know.
I doubt that very
much. He was in a bad way. He was definitely homeless. And he didn't even have a proper coat on him. He had a short jacket. And I had a big woolly, overcoat on me on a heavy jumper underneath that, and I could feel the cold. You know, it wasn't freezing me anymore, but I could feel it getting colder. And I said, this guy, there's no way this guy, you know, he's not going to sleep if he stays out in this. So I took him to the Garda station anyway. And when I went into the Garda station, there were two homeless guys on the floor, one on either side of the public desk. And I went up and I buzzed the public desk for the guard. And after about 2 or 3 minutes, the guard came out. I explained to him who I was, and I was looking for to get this guy a bed. He said, I'll give you a number. So off he went, and he comes back a minute later and hands me a slip of paper with that number that you just called out on it.
But sure, you tried the homeless executive helpline already, had you?
Well, you see, I don't know whether I tried that number, but I was on the homeless executive helpline, and I don't know whether it's that number or not.
But okay, well, what happened when you dialed it after the guard gave it to you?
Sorry?
What happened after the guard gave it to you?
When I dialed that number, I got an automated response which said, and it started off by saying, if you wish to be called back on a different number, press 1. If you otherwise remain on the line. And then there was a pause, and then it came back. We now have your details, and we'll hang up, and we will ring you back. So I hung up the line, and the phone rang back almost immediately. And I could hear a voice on the other end, but the person on the other end couldn't hear me. So after a while, he hung up. So I went through the whole procedure again, and the same thing happened. And then I said, oh, well, maybe it's a coverage issue. So I moved outside into the street, outside the Garda station. Did the same thing again. And this time I got through to the guy and spoke to the guy. I explained to him who I was, and I had this guy here looking for a bed for the night for him. And he said, could I put him on the line? And I said, I can, but he's Lithuanian, and he doesn't have an awful lot of English, you know, so I don't know whether you're going to get much out of him. And he said, well, can I speak to the guard on duty? I says, well, I'll have to buzz again because he's gone inside and he might be a couple of minutes waiting. So then he suggested that, I said something to him, well, what can you do? Can you talk to me? Or can you deal with me? And he said, no, I can't deal with you. I have to either talk to the man in question or the guard. And I said, well, you know, it'll be 2 or 3 minutes before the guard arrives again. And he said, well, would I hang up and get the guard to call him back? And I said, well, I prefer not to. I prefer to keep the line open.
Suffice to say, there's a whole load of kerfuffling and backwards and forwards.
Oh, yeah.
Somebody with limited English is not going to be able to master or get their way around.
So the end of Philip, I had to hand the phone to keep the line open. I had to hand the phone to this guy who spoke to the other guy in Lithuanian. He used very little English. And I don't know what the guy on the other end understood. But the guard emerged anyway, and I took the phone back off the Lithuanian guy and handed it to the guard. And he had a bit of a conversation. Then he asked me, had the guy got an identification? So I went over and asked the guy, had he identification? He gave me his name, and then he fumbled around in a backpack he had. He pulled this letter out, which appeared to be addressed to him at the Vincent de Paul hostel. So I gave that to the guard anyway, and there was a bit more conversation. And then the guard said, this guy wants to speak to you.
Right.
And I was surprised at this, because the guy had told me there was no way he could speak to me. I wasn't, you know, he could only speak to the guard or the boy, or the Lithuanian guy. So I took the phone back off him, and the guy says, I've booked him into a bed for the night in Merchant's Quay. And I said, that's fine. I said, just tell me exactly where Merchant's Quay is. I know where, you know, roughly where
it is. So the system
worked
eventually. You got him into the Merchant's Quay hostel.
I got him into the Merchant's Quay hostel.
How long from the moment that you first made a phone call to he actually got into Merchant's Quay?
I'd say I first made the phone call. I first got through to him shortly about 11:15. I'd say about an hour.
All right. So the system worked, but only if you had English.
System worked after a fashion if you had English. Like, my main reason for contacting you is, A, I couldn't understand why the guy wouldn't deal with me. Like, if I'm there on Friday night, next Friday night, I'm in the same situation. I now have this number. So if I ring this number, and the homeless guy happens to be a foreign national with no English, does the guy at the other end tell me to bring him to a Garda station so he can talk to a Garda? Can you not deal with me? I don't know what the procedure, you know.
I suppose
confused.
From their point of view, you could be absolutely anybody. That is their concern.
I'm fully aware of that. Hang on there a second now.
Lara, I've got word back from the Dublin City Council on why it is that they took those two tents and threw them into the back of the bin van. And the official response is no response, I'm afraid.
You're joking.
No, we've nothing more to add to the sum of human knowledge on that one. 51551, though, is the text number. Stephen, good afternoon. How are you?
How are you there, Philip? I'd just make a point there. We're a motorcycle club down, a member of it. East Coast Roosters, it's called.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we collect every year.
Stephen, are you on speakerphone there?
Yeah, just on the phone off, 30.
If you pick up the line and talk to me direct, it'd make it a little bit more audible.
Now, can you hear me better?
Yeah.
Sorry about that. As I said, I'm a member of a motorcycle club, East Coast Roosters, we're called. It's a club in Arco. We collect every year for bring into the Lighthouse. It's a homeless charity in Dublin and Pear Street. Clothes, tents.
And you're doing a collection shortly, are you?
We're doing a run in there on this Saturday, but we have 6 or 7 van loads of stuff to go into these into the homeless charity, like warm clothes, hoodies, toiletries, etc. Yeah. But what is the point in people giving stuff to these charities when you have the likes of the corporation coming and taking tents up and putting them in bins? The good of people, there's a lot of people out there after donating clothes to us and toiletries and, like, how this can't go on, like. They're human beings, they're people. It could be on anyone's doorstep, this, you know. Them people that are doing this have to realise this. You know, you need an answer. This no comment is not good enough.
Yeah, well, I don't know if that's if they're still working on getting a comment to us, but at the moment they certainly don't have any response as to why it is that what appears to be their employees went and did this without even looking inside the tents to see if there were, you know, valuable, important possessions belonging to this person that's providing them whatever small bit of comfort on a dark winter's night like that.
But the matter where you go, Philip, in this city, you see those tents everywhere. You see them in the Memorial Park in front of Collins' Barracks. They're out along Ring's End. They're all down the canals. Is this what we're going to, and how we treat our own people?
So what is the official policy here? Is it to treat sleeping bags, to treat the cardboard, to treat the tents that are momentarily left behind by people as rubbish, as litter? You know, it's one thing saying at 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning that cardboard or something like that left behind might be rubbish or litter, but at 8 o'clock in the evening, Lara, we were talking about 8 p.m. when you saw this happening, yeah?
Yeah, 8 o'clock in the evening. It was rain. And they just came along, didn't even open the tent up to ask, didn't even say, hello, is there anybody in there? Just picked them up, threw them into the bin and drove off.
So there could have been somebody in there when they initially ripped at it, yeah?
There could have been. There could have been anything in those tents.
Now, let me clarify. We have no response from Dublin City Council yet. Not no comment on the matter or the issue. We just have no response. So we'll wait and see if by the end of the programme they can come back to us with an explanation for this.
Okay.
Stephen, yeah?
I'm a taxi driver myself. I see this every night of the week driving around the city of Dublin. I'm a taxi driver. It's disgraceful what's going on in the country with these without people like this coming and taking their little bit of comfort that they have. The government should be doing more anyways, is number one. Like, there's houses, I can count around Ballyfermot. There's about 20 houses boarded up around here. Boarded up, and most of them are boarded up, like, maybe 6-8 a year. Like, it just can't go on, like, what? These people can't keep doing things like this to these poor people, you know?
What's most puzzling about this is that you think that inside those tents, those fellas could have had pictures, personal mementos, the only thing that was keeping them emotionally, psychologically between the ditches, and that ends up being hurled into the back of a bin van.
But this is it, that's all they have. That's their little coat, that's all they have, is that tent and whatever's inside it, like. And that's what I'm saying, like, people, good people like the likes of the East Coast Roosters there, collecting. There's a lot of work involved. Like we get it, we clean it, we box it, and bring it in and boxes all labelled like trousers, jackets, whatever else, you know. And then we take it out of the vans when we get into Pear Street, all the bikers, and load it down into the place. Then we sit and get a cup of tea with the homeless people that are there, and you know, have a yap and to be out looking at the bikes and everything. They love it. Like, the fella in there that runs it is called Derek, and he's a great man. He's, you know.
And would you worry that people would think twice about donating if they think that it's just going to end up in the back of a corporation bin van?
No, I would worry. Yeah, of course I'd worry, Philip, because what's the point in all this effort if these people are going to pick it up and throw it in the bin? Like, some of the East Coast Roosters there a couple of months ago went to Stradbally with their own diesel and trailers and everything else as charity, and got all these tents that was left behind at these concerts and brought them in. A chap called Martin Ryan there and Austin Johnson there from Arklow, they're members of the Roosters. They took a Monday off work and went in and got all these tents and ground sheets and everything and brought them into the lighthouse after that big concert. People just left them all behind them.
We've had a call from a county council worker, not Dublin City Council, but somebody in one of the rural councils, who doesn't want to come on air for perhaps understandable reasons, but they say that they have been told official policy in their council is to collect up tents and sleeping bags and whatever other personal possessions might be left behind or temporarily left by people who find themselves sleeping rough.
Why?
Official policy to clear them up.
Clearing with what? So to make the city look decent, because there's no homeless in the city. That may be what it is. Oh. They want to open their eyes and get out and walk around the city at night themselves, these councillors and government. There's people lying homeless with kids on the street. You know, it's 2020 nearly. This shouldn't be going on in this era.
That would seem to be the policy, all right, Philip. From the councils or the corporation or the housing ministers, all the way down the line, that's the way it seems to be. If there's rubbish there, treat it as rubbish. If it looks like rubbish, treat it as rubbish. If it's somebody's tent, just pick it up and throw it in the bin.
And what you saw, Laura, was there was...
Nobody's going to worry about some poor unfortunate sleeping rough.
What you saw, Laura, was not just one person acting by themselves, but there was three people, and none of them were disagreeing with each other about whether taking up the tent was the right thing to do or not. This seemed to be something.
Like, in fairness to those lads, you can't really blame them. They're actually doing the job.
Blame the policy, not the person. No, I'm clear about that, but I just want to see, do you think that they, all three of them, had been instructed to do this?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Without a doubt. They were just, and they'd done it so quickly. And it made me sort of wonder, like, when they grabbed the hold of the tents and pulled them up, they actually knew that there was nobody in there. They've been watching this. They know the times that these people are moving, when they're going for somewhere to get a cup of tea, whether they're walking down to the central bank to get a sandwich and a cup of tea off the people that don't like there, and then walking back to what they call their home. The corporation, the county councils know this. They're watching it.
I know. Look, making space for tents. Making space.
Take that tent, put it in the bin, and when he comes back, well, he has nowhere to sleep. He has nothing to keep him warm for the night. So let him walk.
I was going to say, though, making space for tents is not a solution to homelessness, but
no, it's not.
Throwing people's personal possessions in the bin like that is also no response to homelessness either. All right, Lara, thank you very much, and Cormac and Stephen. I'm going to take another break. Tuesday, along the banks of the Grand Canal near the Charlemont Lewis station in Dublin City, Lar saw Dublin City Council workers, or men that he assumed to be Dublin City Council workers because they were driving a Dublin City bin van, taking not just one but two tents that were being used by homeless people and throw the tents and the contents straight into the back of a bin van. Kevin, good afternoon. How are you?
Yes, Philip, how are you doing?
What was your reaction to that?
Look, I was mortified, to be honest. But my thing about all this is, it's the public, the people, that are a lot of the thing here, you know, about getting rid of these tents and all that. They don't want them. And people don't want them in the parks, and when they're walking in and out of the park, and these people are there in their tents. public don't want them, like, that's the thing.
How and do you know the public don't want them, Kevin?
Look at you, I know they don't want them because I was actually talking to a man and the tent was out at the back of it. There was a wall between his house and the park. And the tent was behind the wall, of course. And the thing was, no, we don't want them there. You don't know who they are. You don't know what they're doing. You don't know what they're up to. And like one night, like there's one of them in the tent. The next night there's two or three in it. I mean, you don't know. This is what the people are on about.
Do you not think that the vast majority of people, Kevin, would be more concerned, much more worried about who it is that's living in this tent, how it is that they have come to be there, what can possibly be done for them than the unsightliness of the tent?
To be honest with you now, Philip, a lot of the time, no. People don't want things happening like this with people. I don't know. You have to understand it yourself. Like, and then that goes up to head office in the county council. The word is sent out to whoever is managing the area. The people are complaining about these tents. Get them out of there. You know, like, this is the thing. What do you do with the people? Like, when the politicians as well, the county councillors, then that goes out to them. Where's the votes going to go? Then the fan hits, everything hits the fan like that. Get rid of them.
How do you know this, Kevin?
I mean,
have you made one of these phone calls to the county council yourself?
I have seen the thing happening. I've witnessed the thing happening. I'm not going to tell you who it was or anything like that.
Oh, well, don't tell me who it was, but tell me what happened. What happened?
Yeah, just that the message, the word came out. And these people, it's not overnight to do it. Like, there could be a while there, and next thing, there's the message is coming down from head office, like, are these people gone yet? You know?
I'm sorry, when you say the message is coming down from head office, do you mean from the county council?
Yeah, from the council. You know where head office is, like, that's the Dublin County Council, for instance, their head office. That's not out in the park, like, in these local parks and all that. That's in the city, or wherever it is. I'm not quite sure where it is, but it's in the city somewhere, I think. I come down from them. They're the bosses.
And are you saying, Kevin, that you have first-hand experience that you know that this is to be the case, or are you just assuming it is?
I'm not assuming. I wouldn't ring you if I was assuming. I know this happens. Right?
But and in Dublin, you're saying, or your own area? I'm guessing your own area is loud, is it?
I'm talking about Dublin. No, it's not loud. Why give you that idea?
Sorry, Cavan.
No. I'll tell you Cavan either. It's neither of them anyway.
You're not from Cavan?
Not at all, indeed I'm not.
A little bit Monaghan then?
I'm not Monaghan either, no.
Where are you from?
I just don't want to tell you.
All right. Yeah, never mind.
You just assumed. So then I'm just not going to say. But we're going the wrong direction.
I was just trying to place your accent, but leave that aside. You're saying Dublin City Council, you are absolutely certain with first-hand experience that this is happening, that there is an official policy telling lads, move those tents on.
Yes, but Philip, take this piece into consideration. It hasn't been mentioned since you started talking about it. It's the public complaining. That's what causes the thing. They want the people out of there. And you can take them, can come people on the radio there and they can, the line there, and they can say, oh yeah, it's terrible about these people and all that. That's some people. You know, there's always good people somewhere. But then there's a lot of other people. No, they don't want them. People walking through the park, do you think they want to be walking by tents and people there? And I've seen it, like, people brought wheelie bins to the tents and they had their wheelbits, their bicycles. The whole works, like, they were set up for a while.
And Kevin, do you mean people or do you mean you? Is this your reaction to what you see tents?
That's my thing. As far as I'd be concerned, they could stay there for life. Not at all. So I don't understand that. Well, I do understand all that's going on, like with homeless and all that. But then again, if you want to go a step further, I don't understand why people can't accept getting a hotel bed. You know, I don't understand that either, why they're not happy there. But apart from that, we're talking about the tent.
Well, because a hotel bed might not meet their needs. They might have children with them. They might not ever be able to cook in a hotel room bedroom. I mean, it's not exactly an ideal substitute for a house, is it?
I take that.
But this is, I know we're in the time we're in nowadays, like, and affluent and all that sort of stuff. But years ago, like, I grew up when there was only chimney, like, there could be three and four to a bed like that. I'm only a two-bedroom house. And the children, they managed to crawl around the floor.
They were different times, though, Kevin, and people have come to accept a different standard of living in 2019.
The thing about it is, Philip, you cannot, repeat, not have a house in the country for every single person. You just can't have it. Like, that can never happen.
We managed to do it a long time ago when the country was a lot less affluent.
Well, the country is going, it won't be too long till it won't be too affluent again either. And then where are people going to end up? You know, the homelessness is a thing that's with us. And unfortunately, and indeed I could end up homeless myself. I don't know, like, who knows? In the future, the way things goes in the country and whatever, you could be dumped out overnight.
A lot of people just one paycheck away,
that,
as they say,
that,
yeah.
That can be the thing. And when you're out there, there's a lot of people take a different view. And the view they take, yeah, some people are, oh, yeah, I'll go over. But you see, Philip, just when I'm talking to you, why can't people give these homeless people, why don't they give them something? Sorry, what I mean now is, they won't go over and give them money. No. Do you know why? They want to be in charge. You know, now I'm in power, you have nothing, and I'm going to give you something. So I'll bring you for a sandwich. So it might be the last thing the person wants is a sandwich.
Okay, but that's a...
Do you know what I mean? That's the thing, but it's the
If
control.
Somebody buys a sandwich for a homeless person, you're putting a slightly ungenerous interpretations
sorry,
on their actions.
Yeah, but if I guess, I'll say another bit about that. That is fine, and all that. And
all right.
People, but a lot of people, they may not just want it, but the people not giving it to the homeless person, they want to be in control. You know,
all
give
right.
me something.
All
or
right.
I give you it the way I want to give it to you. I won't let you make up your own mind what you do it or what you spend it on or whatever. I'll buy you something for you.
All right, Kevin. Thank you very much. I have one more break to take. Better get it out of the way.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.